Jane Kim is the first Korean-American district supervisor in the country. She crossed that off her list at the age of 33. She grew up in New York City. Her parents were immigrants, and she became very aware of discrimination and inequality at a young age. That's why, as a teenager, she stopped reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. She hopes one day this will be a nation with freedom and justice for all, but she says we're not there yet. And that is why Jane Kim, who is also a bass-playing, art-loving black belt, got into politics. Supervisor Jane Kim represents District 6 in San Francisco. She's going to talk tonight at 5:30 at Duke University Sanford School of Public Policy. It's part of the Connect to Politics program, and Jane Kim is my guest now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me. I came straight from the airport, so it's nice to be sitting here in your studio.
I know. We had you on Flight Tracker. You were delayed, and we were hoping you'd make it on time. In fact, we created a scandal just so we'd have news on top in case you were late. A scandal that apparently reaches into San Francisco as well, or the Bay Area.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we had our own elected scandal indictment yesterday as well.
Yeah, and this was somebody who had actually been in jail as a member of a Hong Kong crime syndicate.
Oh, so yes, there was other individuals involved, but we also had an elected official that was indicted along with that individual as well.
So that's one of the things that people are going to be concerned about. This program at Duke is designed to encourage young people to get into politics. You are a youngish person coming into, and you're in politics. You're very successful. We're going to talk about what your success. But the fear is that, look, this is all corrupt. Money runs everything. What's the point? How do you answer that?
Yeah, no, actually, when I had first been contemplating running for office, I was really reluctant because I thought, you know, there was something kind of inherently corrupt about politics. And when I was a college student, I had never thought I would run for office. And I was pretty committed to not doing that because I thought all elected officials were compromised. And if they weren't when they were running, that something magically happened while you were in office that would eventually corrupt you. And I have to say, you know, largely my experience in local politics in San Francisco is that there's a lot of really good people. I don't agree with everyone that does policy making, but largely a lot of folks that are truly committed to making the city a better place. We might disagree on what that vision looks like, but work really hard and want to do the right thing.
Well, we thought maybe we were in the post-black bag era when it came to corruption, money, and politics, and we're now in a sort of a corporatocracy where corporate money governs what goes on because of the way it can buy influence. What about that? And is it something – because certainly there's a lot of corporate money now in politics, in public private interest money in politics. Can we really get past that? I mean, you say there are good people who are attracted, but they have to run and they have to be beholden to the people who give them the dough, and the people with the most have the most to say.
Yeah. No, actually you know, it's funny. The first time I ran for office, when I first ran for school board, I actually saw intimately how much money did matter in a race. And I actually lost my first election. You know, San Francisco is probably one of the few towns where you don't have to be the candidate with the most money to win. You can win with a grassroots campaign, which is what I had done my last three elections. But money absolutely matters. And if so much of your support is unevenly balanced, you're going to feel like you owe them when you're in office. And I was pretty lucky actually not to get that much money, to get so many support. And I do actually feel very beholden to youth and seniors and low-income residents that walked for me, that campaigned for me. And in a lot of ways, it feels good that those are the folks that I feel accountable because I know that they were the ones that brought me into office.
Is it different at the local level than it is as you move up the chain?
You know, in San Francisco, we're limited to $500 maximum contributions. And so it is more challenging, I think, when you have such a low cap. Obviously, as you go up in office, the caps get higher. And there is a ton of pressure to raise money in order to win. And I totally see how it happens. You have to have really strong ethical grounds, and you have to have a strong community of people that really support you in that process.
Talk about your district, District 6 in San Francisco. Who are the people there?
Yeah, so I represent a really dynamic and interesting district. I represent the poorest residents in San Francisco, and I also represent some of the wealthiest. Over 75% of all commercial and residential development is happening in the district that I represent. It is one of the older neighborhoods of San Francisco, but because it typically had a lot of industrial use historically, it's where there's a lot of open land use for new construction to happen. And so a lot of the tech companies that you're reading about are moving into the district I represent, into a lot of the old warehouses and formerly vacant buildings. And it's also where there's opportunity to build housing and an office space.
So the challenge there is to develop places that are undeveloped, but make sure everybody comes along so that the money isn't pushing out the residents who live there and working against their best interest.
It's a huge challenge. How do you both attract development and job creation while ensuring that you're not displacing the residents and also small businesses and nonprofits that have always been there because it was affordable? We have the lowest median income in the city, which is $38,000 in San Francisco, and also some of the lowest median rent because we have so much affordable housing and protected low-income housing in our district. But it is very quickly changing. And so for me, the challenge is how to lead and serve a diverse set of constituents and make sure that we are both growing, but also making sure that at the same time that everyone is being lifted by this economic boom.
So you can be called, I think, progressive on most issues and run mostly with the support of progressive and liberal voters. And yet you came under criticism from those very voters and from the left because you encouraged tax breaks for the likes of Twitter to develop these areas. Talk about that.
Yeah. So one of the first policies that I introduced was actually at kind of the bottom of the recession in San Francisco. A company called Twitter was really interested in staying in San Francisco, but said that they would not stay unless they got a tax break because they wanted to. There wasn't a whole lot of buildings for them to move into, and the building that they wanted to move into was on a corridor with the highest commercial vacancy rate in the city and a building that hadn't been occupied in over 50 or 60 years. And so their rationale actually was that they were going to be putting millions of dollars into tenant improvements to help revitalize a building that had been vacant for so long. I'm not someone that supports tax breaks. Philosophically, I think that everyone should be enthusiastic about investing into their community. It pays for schools, teachers, parks, police officers, street improvements, all those sorts of things. But this was an exception where I thought they were going to invest in a corridor.
Hold that thought. We'll come back to this idea as my conversation with Jane Kim continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Jane Kim is with me, supervisor of District 6 in San Francisco. We're talking about some of her story as a supervisor. We'll talk about her personal story in a minute. Tonight, she's going to be speaking at Duke University. Before the break, you were talking about the challenge of developing underdeveloped neighborhoods without pushing people out and offering tax breaks to the likes of Twitter. So continue that thought for us.
Yeah, so what I had said was what I thought was interesting about what they were offering was, again, that they were willing to come to a corridor that had the highest commercial vacancy rate and willing to invest, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in tenant improvements. And we knew that tax breaks don't incentivize corridors. There's a lot of really good data to show that tax breaks don't actually do that. But what we were banking on was that Twitter could revitalize the corridor. Unfortunately, Twitter wouldn't come without the tax break. So we spent a lot of time really refining the tax break. One, it was only for net new jobs created, so we wouldn't be giving them a break on what they had already been paying. And second, we would only give it on buildings that had historical vacancy. So if you moved into the building next door, which actually companies like Square and Uber did, that didn't have historical vacancy, you wouldn't get the tax break. And so that was ultimately how we brokered the compromise. And it continues to be a challenging policy. And that's one of those things as a policymaker, you often take a leap of faith and you just kind of hope that it works. But you know that you're accountable to continuing to ensure that the policy works the way you intended it to. So we've definitely followed up with a number of other policies to ensure that we're not displacing the residents in the neighborhood.
So there you go. If you are young and you have a strong mind and you like challenges, politics is the place to be rather than just throw up your hands and leave it to the criminals. You can use that tonight.
You know, actually, one of the reasons why I really love my job is because it is so intellectually challenging. I find that you're often in a box and you're trying to figure out what resources you can find within that box and kind of place it in different areas and see what can work. But it is what I love about what I do.
I want to get a little bit of your history because your personal history is interesting. Growing up in New York, your parents immigrants from Korea, and you felt the sting of discrimination at a very early age.
Yeah, so I grew up in New York City. It's actually very different from California. And Asian Americans were not really considered even a demographic when I was growing up. And New Yorkers are very honest. They're very direct. And so people were always very clear with how they felt about you or how they felt about your parents. And so growing up with that experience of seeing how people treated my parents because they couldn't speak English well because of the way they looked was something that certainly influenced me. But also growing up in New York in the 80s was really experiencing the class divide that I saw. And as an 11-year-old waiting for the bus to go home, being asked by an adult for money was something that was really hard for me to understand. And so I got motivated at a very young age to want to serve the community. And so I started volunteering for the Coalition for the Homeless when I was 14.
You've made that an important part of your initiative, your political initiative in San Francisco as well. Affordable housing is a serious, serious problem everywhere, but San Francisco has got to be tough.
Yeah, I spent 6 years as a community organizer before I went into office, and I worked for an affordable housing development agency running their youth empowerment program. And so we did a lot of advocacy and planning work around both neighborhood planning, whether it was more public transit or more open space, but also more affordable housing and better conditions in existing low-income housing.
So you have, you know, as we all do, multiple identities, but I do want to talk about them because they're a part of your biography now, a Korean-American, a woman who has faced these challenges. Are you conscious of those identities as you sort of work on these political issues?
You know, it's interesting. I came into politics at a very interesting point when I first got involved in my first candidate campaign, not for myself. There was only one Asian American on the Board of Supervisors. And I was working on actually a very progressive mayoral candidate's campaign. And I was pushing for him to spend more time in Asian American communities. And I remember the pushback was, and this was coming from very progressive folks, they would say, you know, we really want to do it. It's the right thing to do. But frankly, they just don't vote. So we only have 30 days. We have to win. We're going to go where people vote. And it's interesting now, almost 10 years later, I'm on a board now. We have our first Asian American elected mayor and now 5 Asian Americans on the Board of Supervisors. And it's almost amazing how quickly it happened. I mean, it was decades of organizing, of getting people registered to vote, door knocking, going back to remind people when the absentee ballots would come. And now there's a practice in the Asian American community, and we've been able to elect a lot of Asian Americans into office.
So it's all of a piece, getting people interested enough to vote and also to participate in the system as elected officials.
Right, and also getting candidates to run that excite that community, right?
Well, it's going to be a great talk, and I thank you for talking with us. Jane Kim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jane Kim is speaking tonight at 5:30 at Duke University Sanford School of Public Policy as part of the Connect to Politics Speaker Theory.